Hello, everyone. I'm not going to apologize for the quality of my slides because, you know, I just don't think it really matters. I mean, people, if you make them too fancy, people assume you're trying to compensate for something. That's my philosophy. Okay, so this talk is actually very similar to some of the heard in this session. It's a strange session, isn't it? Because almost all of these talks are about some kind of fast FMLR with some kind of factorization. Now, I was going to introduce. Okay, so on this hall, should we call it CMLR or should we call it FMLR? For some reason, I've gone over recently to the CMLR side, but I'm hedging my bets in the actual talk. I think you get everyone here understands that it's the same thing. I'm not going to go through this slide in detail because it's the same as many slides that have been presented already. The notation is a little bit different. This notation with a little plus, it's kind of my personal notation, but I use it because I'm not comfortable with all of the Greek letters, and it's hard for me to remember what psi is and that it's supposed to be the same as x. So I just think it's easier to remember this little plus means you add a 1. In some people's work, it's a psi. There's also another little confusing difference between people's notation that sometimes people put the 1 on the end and sometimes at the beginning. I think the IBM habit is to put it on the end, and that's what I'm doing. This is another kind of introductory slide that, since we've had so many introductions to CMLR, FMLR, in this session, I don't really think I need to go through this. Now, the last point I put in here is that FMLR, I'm going to switch them up, works with relatively little adaptation data. Now here, relatively little adaptation data means after about 30 seconds or so, and someone else actually in this session did mention that figure, after about 30 seconds or so, you get almost all of the improvement that you're going to get. But 30 seconds is a little bit too much for many practical applications. If you have some telephone service where someone is going to like request a stock quote or do a web search or something, you might only have 2 or 3 seconds or maybe 5 seconds of utterance. And that's not really enough for FMLR to work. In fact, below about 5 seconds, in my experience, it's not going to give you anything. It's going to actually make it worse. So you might as well turn it off. So that's the problem that this talk is addressing, and actually it's the same problem that many previous talks in this session have been. I think all of the previous talks in this session have been addressing this problem. So, okay, this slide is summarizing some of the prior approaches, and I should emphasize that I'm talking about the prior approaches to somehow regularizing CMLR. Obviously, there's many other things that you can do, like eigenvoices or the stuff that the previous speaker mentioned, messing with other parameters, but I'm talking about CMLR regularization. So the simple things you can do, you can just make the A matrix diagonal. And that's kind of an option in HTK, and it's a good approach. You get a lot of improvement, but it's very ad hoc. You can also make a block diagonal. This approach had its origins, of course, in the delta and delta delta type features. So you have 3 blocks of 13 by 13. And although nobody really uses those features unprocessed anymore, well, no serious sites, I don't think, use them anymore. Without some kind of transformation. You can still use the block diagonal. In fact, one of the baselines that we'll be presenting is we use these blocks even though they've lost their original meaning. And, you know, it still seems to work. So another approach is Bayesian approaches. There's been a couple of different papers, both called FMAPLR. And by FMAPLR, it means we do FMLR, but we have a prior and we pick the map estimate. There's been a paper from Microsoft and one from IBM, and they had slightly different priors, but it was the same basic idea. This is one of the baselines that we're going to be using in our experiments. An issue with these approaches is that you'd probably like to have a prior that tells you how all of the rows of the transform correlate with each other. But in practice, that's not really doable. So you generally see priors that are either row by row or even completely diagonal. So it's a prior over each individual parameter. Now, the approach that we are using is parameter reduction using a basis, where the FMLR matrix is some kind of weighted sum of basis matrices or of prototype matrices. So the basic idea, and now this is similar to some of the previous talks. Sometimes people have done various factorizations and done a basis on, you know, the upper and lower half or something like that. We're talking about a basic expansion of just the raw transform. And the basic form of it is given here, where these W subscript n, these are the kind of like prototype or eigen FMLR matrices, and they're kind of computed in advance somehow. And for a given speaker, you have to estimate these coefficients. Now, this is not a really convex problem, but it's solvable in a kind of local sense, and it's not really, I don't think it's a practical issue. So the previous work in this area, you kind of decide the basis size in advance. So this big N, you decide, we're going to make that 200, say. The number of parameters in the actual matrix, what's 39 by 40? It's like a couple of thousand. So if you decide in advance and we're going to make 200 coefficients, that you know, does pretty well for typical configurations if you have, you know, between 10 and 30 seconds of speech. But you're going to get a degradation once you have a lot of data, because you're not really estimating all of the parameters that you could estimate. And eventually it gets a bit worse when you have a lot of adaptation data. So this is the closest prior work. So there's a couple of differences of what we're describing here from this prior work that was done in IBM. One basis size to vary per speaker. And we have a very simple rule. We just say the more data we have, the more coefficients we can estimate. And we just make the number of coefficients proportional to the amount of data. And of course, you could do all kinds of fancy stuff with information criteria and so on. But I think this technique is, you know, easily complicated enough already without introducing a new aspect. So we just picked a very simple rule. The other aspect is we have a cute way of estimating these basis matrices WN that's a little bit more clever than just doing PCA. And partly, we're just trying to popularize this type of method. We have a journal version of this paper in which we try to explain very clearly how to implement it, because it really does work. And it's very robust in everything, I believe. So I think it's something that I do recommend to use. This slide probably covers material that I've... No, I'm going to go through this slide. So the simple methods like making a diagonal, a block diagonal, it's all very well and good, but it just doesn't... It's just a bit ad hoc, and it doesn't give you that much improvement. And also, it's always a hassle to have to decide, like, how much data do we have? Can we afford to do the full one, or are we going to make it diagonal? And then there's this trade-off, and you can get into having count cutoffs and stuff, but it's a bit of a mess. Now, I don't have anything against Bayesian methods. You know, if we could have done this in a Bayesian way, I think that's what's more optimal. Because by picking a basis size, you're kind of making a hard decision. But with a Bayesian method, you could do that in a soft way. And, you know, I think making a soft decision is always better than a hard decision. But the problem with the Bayesian approach is, firstly, it's very hard to estimate the prior, because the whole reason we're in this situation is we don't have a ton of data per speaker, right? And assuming your training data is matched to your testing condition, you're not going to have a lot of data from your training data to estimate the W matrices. So how are you going to estimate a prior, because you don't have good estimates of the, you know, the things they're trying to get a prior on? And of course you can do all of these Bayesian schemes where you integrate and stuff, but it just becomes a big headache. Plus there's always so many choices to make. But the reason I like this basis type of method is that you just decide we're going to use a basis and everything just falls out and it's obvious what to do. So I want to talk about how to estimate the basis. So because we're going to decide the coefficients and test time, we need a kind of ordered basis where you have the most important elements first and the least important elements last. If you were going to say we're going to have n equals 200 and just that's it, then it wouldn't really matter whether they were all mixed up or what order they were in. But because we're going to decide the number of coefficients in test time, we need to have this ordered thing. So it seems very natural that PCA or, you know, SVD or those kinds of approaches, they naturally give you this. But I'm not really comfortable just saying we're going to do PCA because, you know, who's to say that that makes sense? One obvious argument why it doesn't make sense is that if you were to kind of scale the different dimensions of your feature vector, it's going to change the solution that PCA gives you. You know, I mean, it's going to change it it's going to change the answer, basically. It's going to affect your decoding. And to me, that's a sign that it's not the right thing to do. So the framework that I think is most natural is maximum likelihood. We're going to choose, try to pick the basis that maximizes the likelihood on test. And I don't think I have time to go through the whole, and I wasn't planning to go through the whole, you know, argument about what we're doing. But basically, what we end up doing is PCA, but in a slightly preconditioned space. So this W is a 39 by 40 matrix, typically. But we want to consider the correlations between the rows, and it's not really convenient to think of it as a matrix. So let's think of it as one big vector of size 39 by 40, but we can concatenate the rows. Now, I don't know how well this argument works, but think about the objective function for each speaker. If that objective function were a quadratic function, and if we can somehow do a change of variable so that the quadratic part of that function is just proportional to the unit matrix, then it's possible to show that the kind of right solution is just doing weighted PCA. And there's some kind of derivation. I mean, it might be obvious to some people how you derive that. But, you know, let's just take it as given for now that that's true. So then to do is do this change of variables so that the objective function is quadratic for each speaker. Unfortunately, it's not quite possible to do that because there's a couple of reasons. Firstly, the objective function is not really quadratic. There's this log determinant and it's very nonlinear. And secondly, you can take a Taylor series approximation around the kind of default matrix I and 0. You take a Taylor series around there, and the quadratic the quadratic term in that Taylor series, remember it's a big vector, right? So the quadratic term is like a big matrix of, you know, about 2,000 by 2,000. This quadratic term, it depends on the stats. So it's not just a constant, but I don't think the stats really vary that much in an important way. So it is possible to kind of it's possible to make an argument that once we work out the average of these quadratic terms and then kind of precondition so that that average is unit, it's possible to make a reasonable argument that for each speaker, those matrices are approximately unit. And this is a situation where we'd like it to be unit, but it's not going to make a big difference if it's not quite unit, because all this is doing is we're going to pre-rotate everything and then do PCA. And if you don't quite pre-rotate correctly, rotation is not the correct word, kind of precondition or whatever. If you don't do that correctly, it's not going to like totally change the result of PCA. All that's going to happen is that, let's say, the first eigenvector is going to be mixed up a little bit with the second and so on. So it's pretty close to maximum likelihood. Now, I think I covered this material. So the training time computation is you do this. The training time computation basically involves computing big matrices like this and doing like Kurlesky and SVD and stuff. It's all described in the journal paper. So in test time, there's an iterative update. In test time, we need to compute the coefficients, those d subscript something. So it's a non-convex problem, but it's pretty easy to get a local optimum. We just use like steepest descent, and you do it pretty exact line search. And it's all described in the paper. So this is the result. This slide requires a little bit of explanation. So we have two of test data. One is short utterances, one is long. It's like one is the digits type of task and stocks and stuff, and one is voicemail. Now, the left, we divided each of those two into four subsets based on length. And the x-axis is length of utterance. So 10 to the 0 is 1 second, 10 to the 1 is 10 seconds. And each of these kind of, lines of points corresponds to a bin of test data. So we kind of divide it up into buckets, and on the left-hand side is short utterances, on the right is long. And each point is a relative improvement. Now, the triangles, the dark triangles on the bottom, that's just regular FMLR. And it's actually making things worse for the first three bins. And then it helps a bit. Now, the reason why the word error rate kind of jumps up and down a bit is because it's different types of data. So this is maybe not the ideal data to test this on, but you've got to look at the relative differences in these things. The very top line is our method, and it's doing a lot better. It's giving a lot more improvement than the other methods. The other tested are the three-block one, the diagonal one, FMAP-LR. Those are all better than doing regular CMLR. You get some improvement for the shorter amount of data, but we get a lot more improvement from our method. So, I mean, the story is that if you have, let's say, between about 3 and 10 seconds of data, using this method will give you a big improvement versus doing FMAP-LR or diagonal or whatever. So, But if you have, you know, let's say more than 30 seconds, it really doesn't make a difference. So I think I have pretty much covered all of this. I'm being asked to wrap up. Yeah, I think we've covered all of this. So I recommend the journal paper if you want to implement this, because I do describe very clearly how to do it, and I think this stuff really does work. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. We have time for a question or two. Everybody's done for the day? Okay, well, let's close the session then. Okay, thanks a lot.